Good afternoon. I thought I'd start out by with this iconic photograph of children playing in New York City across the street from the North River Sewage Treatment Plant, which is really what catalyzed my action and the creation of my organization, We Act for Environmental Justice. And this is the cover of Environmental Health Perspectives published by NIEHS. Certainly, we know that the most vulnerable children in the country are children living in environmental justice communities, those that are of color and low income. Certainly, environmental justice is a civil rights analysis of environmental decision making. These are communities targeted for polluting facilities. And where I work and live in northern Manhattan, we're working to build healthier communities by assuring that people of color participate in meaningfully in the creation of sound and fair environmental health policies and practices. And we got started back in 1988, and our first struggle was the North River Sewage Treatment Plant, which I just showed you, and we're working within a national movement of hundreds of grassroots groups around the country. This is a GIS map of Manhattan. You'll see a dotted line which separates northern Manhattan. Unfortunately, today, most of the people living below that line do not have any power, no electricity at all, and the lower, very lowest part of Manhattan is currently much of it underwater, with the subway system totally underwater. But in the northern half, you will see that the darker areas show the higher asthma rates and also where all of the polluting facilities are located. So again, northern Manhattan's a very small area. Excess mortality from asthma, cancer, heart disease, high rates of low birth weight, obesity, and learning disabilities. And the exposures are from multiple sources. Northern Manhattan's also a non-attainment area for clean air standards, ranked number one in cancer risk from air toxics by the EPA. We've looked at what we believe are healthy community indicators for children in our community, and so these are the areas in which we work. Certainly healthy indoor environments and clean air have been priorities for our organization. Certainly the growing burden of adverse birth outcomes, neurodevelopmental disorders and disease in children across the nation. We've got 8% of U.S. children born with low birth weight, 14% of them are African-American babies, and certainly you can see the rest of those statistics, not very good for our children. I'm going to talk a little about the partnership that We Act has had over the last 14 years with the Columbia Children's Environmental Health Center, where their mission is to prevent childhood asthma, neurodevelopmental impairment, obesity and cancer through early identification of environmental risk factors. So the center study is a sample of 725 African American and Latino pregnant women living in the South Bronx and northern Manhattan. Mothers are all healthy, non-working, and non-smokers, and again, exposed to disproportionately high exposure to environmental pollutants. These are some of the pollutants and exposures that the center has been looking at and multiple outcomes. I think INSE went over some of these findings a little earlier, but we've been looking at prenatal exposure to PAHs from diesel, which have resulted in low birth weight and head circumference. We've looked at children with exposure to PAH, again, lower test scores on the Bailey test for cognitive development. We looked at exposure to two household pesticides, which in the beginning of the study were still being sold, chlorpyrifos and diazinon. But halfway through the study, those chemicals were banned by EPA, and so we have seen the reduction of that exposure. Again, these are some of the outcomes and exposures that the center has been looking at. So I have been a co-director of the Community Outreach and Translational Core of the Center over the last 12 or 13 years. And so we are working to develop educational materials that present our current knowledge specifically around endocrine disruptors. And we work to communicate the center findings to policymakers, public health and clinical professionals, as well as community residents. So we use center data in a number of ways. The first to educate the public by targeting residents through workshops that address the impact of health, of toxicity and beauty and ethnic care products. We're also been informing advocates through webinars. We just co-hosted one last month on chemicals and public health with Silent Spring and Women's Voices for the Earth. We have developed a Healthy Home, Healthy Child campaign beginning last in 2000, and over the years have developed newsletters and materials that focus on recent center findings, again around secondhand smoke, air pollution, pesticides, and integrated pest management. It's one of our new brochures around pesticides. We also work strongly to translate research findings into policy advocacy. And so we have developed a statewide campaign with a Just Green partnership made up of about 80 organizations throughout New York State. And we're working to educate legislators on some of these issues. And we're working to refute the chemical industry presentations. We're working to protect communities by, we've just had a new BPA legislation passed last year in the state legislature banning BPA in children's products, but now we've got to work with the New York State Attorney General's office to ensure a force enforcement of that new legislation. Because again, compliance with legislation and our laws is important, and if you don't have a watchdog monitoring that, it does not always happen. So air quality has been a primary concern because Manhattan is a non-attainment area, and we know that diesel soot is really bad for our health, and we now know what those outcomes are. Over the years, we've been able to use research from the center to support a strong evidence-based campaign that eventually transformed the largest bus fleet in the country to compressed natural gas, particle traps on all bus tailpipes, investment in hybrid diesel, and the early use of ultra-low sulfur fuel, which was required by EPA. This was a press conference announcing that campaign with bus shelter advertisements in the back that we took throughout the city. We also have strong support from the Transit Workers Union as well, because they are exposed inside those depots to the same diesel impacts. Again, just showing you some of the conditions in the community. These are garbage trucks that are parked outside in a parking lot right outside people's windows, and they start idling at 5:30 in the morning to warm those engines up before they begin to take off. And of course, children are living right there exposed to this diesel. Again, another large bus depot, as you can see, one of the largest housing projects in New York City, right across the street. Also, a public school is located at the bottom of that public housing project. So that's where the exposures are coming from. And this was part of our media campaign. We blitzed the governor with postcards to really begin to create that public awareness that has resulted in cleaning up the bus fleet. So again, working to translate science into policy and action, we are developing partnerships for good food in schools, continuing to testify and use findings at the local, city, and national level that has really begun to impact chemical policy, transportation policy, and beginning climate change advocacy as well. Again, prenatal exposure to air toxics has been a key issue for us. and government regulation is beginning to show benefits. These are some of the legislative accomplishments around Diesel Emission Reduction Act at the state legislature in New York, a local law that required use of ultra-low sulfur diesel before the EPA phase-in, and a new state mandate for New York City to adopt the best available technology for pollution control in school buses. And, of course, school buses are some of the dirtiest vehicles on the road. Again, we had to develop a demonstration project to demonstrate to New York City what the best available technology was for school buses, because, of course, they wanted to use the least expensive technology, which was not the best. And so we were able, through a state grant, to demonstrate that best available technology that would take out 98% of fine particles. Again, more policy impact. We had our state senator in Harlem pass the BPA law, banning BPA in children's products and toys. Again, we've been active on passing a bill banning the sale in New York State of chlorinated Tris, which is a flame retardant used in products for children under three. That was just signed this summer. Again, PBDEs are flame retardants. They've been in the news quite a bit, associated with adverse neurodevelopmental effects on children. And again, they are endocrine disruptors. And the Endocrine Society just came out with a statement of principles, really saying that the developmental age at which these exposures occur is a critical consideration in understanding their effects. So again, the publicity and the advocacy is beginning to make a difference and to raise the consciousness of science, scientists and their associations. So I just wanted to focus a little on flame retardants and let you know that they are in household furniture. They're linked to cancer, neurological disorders, and developmental problems. There have been a lot of industry misstatements about this issue because flame retardants really do not provide adequate protection from fires. But again, the chemical industry has a financial stake in continuing these retardants and not coming up with a safer alternatives. And just to let you see where flame retardants are found, upholstery, carpet padding, even in some cases in electronics, and again, the impact on children who are playing on the floor, picking up toys, putting their hands in their mouths, really impact them, and we find that they are most exposed to these flame retardants, but we can reduce that risk through taking cautions in terms of hand washing. And also there's a caution that handling the dryer lit, you should also be sure that you wash your hands after touching that dryer lit, because again, it's got a concentration of flame retardants and other chemicals. So again, just some of our Healthy Home, Healthy Child campaign, a press conference letting on Earth Day with Ricky Pereira, who's PI of the center, and some of our elected officials, and we gave a grade for a variety of environmental media for Northern Manhattan. Issues of food security is very important in environmental justice communities. We have a very high 44% obesity rate in East Harlem, and again, very little access to quality fruits, vegetables, and supermarkets. This is a typical school lunch where 95% of uptown children qualify for free lunches. Often this is what they're getting. Just wanted to talk about some of the educational materials we have in progress, and we develop these through focus groups and checking them with affected residents in the community. We incorporate feedback and finalize our educational materials through our community advisory board and other community residents. So this is our team, and how can we take action, signing onto letters, calling your elected officials, meeting them in their district offices, even setting up house parties and training sessions for your members and your constituencies. And so again, I want to thank you and just say that for about 15 years, I was a board member of the Children's Environmental Health Network, and they deserve your strong support.